Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Workrow.
And today we will be talking about Ridley Scott's latest epic, Gladiator 2. We both saw this a few weeks ago and are really excited to talk about it. We'll review the film, talk about its Oscar prospects, and do a little bit of comparing it, of course, to Gladiator.
I'm curious what everyone thinks about this movie. It has a lot to live up to with its original Gladiator starring Russell Crowe, and there are two actors reprising their roles that we have to talk about, but I think it's triumphant in some ways and disappointing in others, revamping the movie in a sense with Paul Mescal and Pedro Pascal, other newer actors that we've seen a lot in the past couple of years. So I'm curious to see what you thought of it and if you appreciated some of those updates or changes, dealing with the Colosseum, with Roman history. Lots to dive into.
Yeah, definitely. I had a lot of fun with this movie. I saw it when I was in LA. Paul Mescal introduced it, and I think there was a big question mark around Paul Mescal in particular with this movie because we're familiar with him. We watched Normal People and All of Us Strangers and After Sun and have really been following his work. But a lot of the audience members for Gladiator 2, I think it's fair to say, he's going to be brand new to them. So I think that question was, can Paul Mescal really be this action star, this classic Hollywood leading man, really, of this great action-adventure epic? And I think he had big shoes to fill if you're thinking about Russell Crowe and his performance, which he won Best Actor for Gladiator, and that's, I think, such a great movie star performance. But I think what I really liked about this movie, and we'll, of course, talk about Paul Mescal and his performance, but what I really liked about it was Denzel. I just had so much fun with this character, and I can't wait to talk about it. I think, sure, there are some issues with the script, and it doesn't all make sense all the time, but I just had so much fun with him whenever he was on screen. It just reminded me of how much I love him as an actor and that he is one of our national treasures, really. So let's get right into Gladiator 2. The plot here: years after witnessing the death of the revered hero Maximus at the hands of his uncle, Lucius is forced to enter the Colosseum after his home is conquered by the tyrannical emperors who now lead Rome with an iron fist. With rage in his heart and the future of the empire at stake, Lucius must look to his past to find strength and honor to return the glory of Rome to its people. This was directed by Ridley Scott and stars Paul Mescal, Denzel Washington, Pedro Pascal, Connie Nielsen, Fred Hechinger, Joseph Quinn, and more. This is the sequel to Gladiator, which won 5 Oscars, Best Picture, Best Actor for Russell Crowe, Costume Design, Sound, and Visual Effects, and was nominated for 7 others: Director, Supporting Actor for Joaquin Phoenix, Original Screenplay, Art Direction, Cinematography, Film Editing, and Score. And it's important to note that most of our collaborators are back. So Art Direction, Arthur Max is doing the production design here. Costume Design, Yanti Yates did the first one. She's back for this one. So there's a lot of crossover. And I think an important detail, though, probably is that we do have a different screenwriter here. So David Scarpa wrote the screenplay for Gladiator 2. He also did the screenplays for Napoleon and All the Money in the World. That might sound some alarm bells to some of our listeners if you, you know, aren't a fan of those movies. But I think we can talk about the script and what works and maybe what doesn't. But the first screenplay was by a team: David Franzoni, John Logan, and William Nicholson. So go right back into how you started the episode. You said that you liked some things and you didn't like others. What did you think of Gladiator 2?
I think, like many audiences, people are going into this movie with high expectations, and a lot has been built up with the trailers and hearing about some of the press interviews going on with Denzel or Paul. And when the movie started, I was really excited. I loved the opening credits, which kind of tell us a rehashing of Gladiator and what happens at the end of Gladiator. And I was like, oh, this is beautiful. It's like artwork and it's taking us back to 200 AD. And I think a lot of the action, or maybe just the screenplay in general, is mirrored off of Gladiator. We have a battle in the beginning, we have a loss, and we have a purpose for then Maximus, now Hanno / Lucius. That's something else I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from there, I was like, okay, I kind of expected this, and it seemed a little too simple. My problems come in the end of Act Two and all of Act Three. And I think by that final battle and some of the dialogue there, I was just like, I need to leave.
Oh, no.
I was so disappointed with how they left this movie. And to hear that they're working on Gladiator 3 already, I'm like, please put it to bed. We don't need to continue this story. If you couldn't even make number 2 that much more impressive or something that I'm dying to see more of. And some of that is where they leave the characters and the arcs of them in this film. But I think by the end, I left with a very sour taste in my mouth, though there were aspects like some of the visual effects, some of the battles that I was impressed with and entertained by. What did you think of the movie? Am I being too harsh?
No, I don't think you're being too harsh. I think there are certain things to this movie that are wrapped up way too quickly. That was an issue I had with the third act. So we're not going to spoil anything. We'll just talk around this a little bit since the movie just came out. But I expected something a bit more drawn out here. Not that this movie needed to be longer, but if you have this kind of final face-off between two characters who are the best characters in the movie, I need more. I need it to have really an impactful punch and not just feel like a little blip along the way to get to some big speech at the end. And that's kind of what it felt like. And I think when a character deserves better and they don't get that in a screenplay, that really frustrates me. So I had a similar response, I would say, to that. And we're kind of dancing around what happens. So to jump back, though, I think that what I liked about this story more than Gladiator, I think, is that it takes a lot of different twists and turns and it goes in different directions that I think are really compelling and are really thinking about our current moment. And it's interesting for Ridley Scott to interrogate that as a filmmaker who, he's getting older. He's made so many movies in his career. And I do think this is one of his best ones in the later era. I mean, the bar is low, let's say, with Napoleon and House of Gucci. But I was pleasantly surprised with how much I liked this and how much it did for me live up to the original. Now, do I wish Connie Nielsen had more to do? Yes. Her character is so underwritten here, and I wanted more, I think, from her story as a mother who loses her son. And, you know, she's coming to terms with potentially seeing him again. And I think that those scenes could have been more emotionally impactful. And I also, just a quick note before we get into some of the other things that I did like. It's not a spoiler, obviously, to say that Hanno, the Paul Mescal character, is Lucius. It's not like he was a baby when he was smuggled out of Rome or anything.
Right.
So it was interesting, like, his response to coming back to Rome that I think needed to be unpacked a little bit more in the screenplay. And I do think, you know, a strength of a movie like The Last Duel, which I know you didn't like, but I liked a little bit more, bringing someone like Nicole Holofcener in to write that so that they could have the woman's perspective and think about Jodie Comer's character in that way. I feel like she would have been a really great addition here to David Scarpa to help look at the Lucilla character and how she would feel facing her son, but also, you know, her relationship with her husband and her relationship with her father, Marcus Aurelius, who, like she says in the movie, people have been trying to kill her or been threatened by her since her father died. I wish we could get into that a little bit more because I love a female character like that, but I just thought she was underwritten and she could have even given a better performance if the character was stronger, I think.
Mm-hmm. Even in the original, she was imprisoned by Commodus's reign, the Joaquin Phoenix character, and she kind of just, again, repeats that experience here a little bit in saying what has been happening in the past 20 years. So I agree there. The one comment about the ending that I will say, again, no spoilers, but yeah, I looked at my watch. We had like 10, 15 minutes left, and I'm like, we're at the climax of the movie, and this is all the time we have left. I was just shocked. So yeah, I think the wrap-up was very poorly timed and paced. But going back to the Lucius part of this, so in the original, he was played by Spencer Treat Clark, and I rewatched the original a bit ago and then yesterday just to refresh after having seen Gladiator 2. And yeah, he's a kid and he interacts with Maximus and we don't really know the end of his story. And I guess that was a big thing with viewers theorizing what happened and who was his father, because in that movie, we are told that his father, Lucius Verus, was his dad. And that's just what we were led to believe. And now it's this whole thing, which when I was watching the movie, I thought it was a twist. I'm like, okay, I understand that this is why you made a second film to maybe tell more of the story. But now it's just in the trailer for the movie that it's like, oh, this is Lucius. That's Paul Mescal and his father, Maximus, who said this really important thing. And they have this shrine to him under the Colosseum. I'm like, did I miss something here? Like, did my viewing, which I'm glad I had before I saw all this, because I think that was actually something I enjoyed in the movie, was the question and him coming to terms with finding that out and accepting it, or at least him now having that relationship with his mom and trying to understand that. I think that's a lot of the depth of his character. And the fact that they just ruined it, I feel like, at least to me, I am a little disappointed by that.
I think it was fairly predictable to some people. Like, I remember when the movie was announced, or when we saw maybe the first poster, my dad was like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's his son. And I was like, are we sure? So I think for people who are maybe familiar with the movie or who just kind of guessed where the story would go next, it makes logical sense.
Mm-hmm.
If we're thinking about the hero's journey and someone who's returning from a very different type of life, coming back into the Colosseum and thinking about power differently, I think that it makes a lot of sense. But I agree. I think it would have played really well as a twist, a real twist in the movie. I think that would have been a pretty strong idea story-wise.
Talking about some of the other characters maybe and how we feel about them, I guess let's start with Denzel because he's our other big lead. We can talk about Pedro Pascal in a minute. Lead, I say, I mean, he's being run in supporting, but he is playing Macrinus. And he, in looking at the format of Gladiator, he is now the slave master, kind of like Oliver Reed was as Proximo in the first movie. He now takes in Hanno or Lucius, whatever you want to call him, and trains him to become a gladiator. I mean, at this point, he's still Hanno, right? Because
yeah, he's still Hanno at that point.
See, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he trains him, but he's upset with the Pedro Pascal character, Marcus Acacius. He's kind of being trained to get revenge on him. So I think that's an interesting place to start with these characters.
Yeah, so I think it's actually a really cool setup and a classic revenge tale with a little bit of a twist, right, that we have Hanno, who he's filled with rage and this desire to kill General Acacius. But the wrinkle here is that, right, he's associated very closely, obviously, with the Roman Empire, with the government, and he's a general, and the people love him because he's conquering all of these lands. And we learn that he's doing this at the direction of these two evil twin emperors that we will talk about in a minute. And so he has his own inner conflict about his place in all of this and the cruelty of the Roman Empire. So he's also not what he seems, right? And I like that. So we have then a character going after him when you just want to shake Hanno and say, you know, no, he's not this evil, horrible person, actually, right? He wants better for Rome in the same way that you do. You're just using different means to get there. And I love stories like that because they make me think of political thrillers. This actually reminded me a lot of what I missed from the last horrible season of Game of Thrones. I wanted it to feel more like this. But yeah, Denzel as Macrinus, right? His story is interesting too because he's trying to control Rome through different means, being this former slave. And I think that his motivations are also a little bit undercooked in the script. I wanted some more there because that's also a fascinating story. And I think there's just a lot of meat left on the bone. But I love this character so much. And I don't know if you had a similar reaction or if this is just a me thing, but after I left this movie, I mean, every single scene he was in, he reminded me of Faye Dunaway and like Joan Crawford and these actresses that I love who are just so much. It's just over the top, but in the best way possible. It's walking right up to the camp line, but not crossing it. It's the greatest Shakespearean characters you can think of meets a college football coach. These are all things I was thinking about while I was watching this performance. I think so much of the power of his performance is in how physical it is. And it's physical in a completely different way than Paul Mescal's performance, which is getting in the ring and chewing up baboons. Like Denzel, his performance is physical because of how he plays with the robes that he wears and how he twirls his chunky rings around his fingers. It is just perfect. And I had so much fun watching him. I thought it was just like a ball of charisma. And I wanted him to be in every single scene. Some of his line readings, he says politics, like it has five S's at the end. When he says, this is my house, it's like classic Denzel that you expect, but he's just playing the role in only a way that he can. And I loved that. So yeah, if you want to quote me and say, you know, Denzel is like Faye Dunaway in this, go ahead, of course. Likely comparison for me to make, probably. But yeah, I loved it. It was like how I feel about her in Supergirl. That's how I feel about Denzel in Gladiator 2.
I think he's just operating on a different level than many of the other actors because of his history and just being the biggest A-list star, Oscar favorite, actor of a generation. Like, he is just all of those things in a subpar movie to me. So my view of all of it was a bit detached, but I do think that he gave a really good performance. He's both playing loud and refined at the same time, which is fun to see, but it is very Shakespearean and he's power hungry in this role. And so I think his arc is also the most impressive and interesting in the movie because things aren't necessarily what we think they are. And so I think getting to delve into that with how he acts and what he does, alliances he forms, is what partially kept me going throughout the movie. I also agree that his line reading of politics is the best in the entire movie. That's one of the only things I've written down. And it was funny, there was a Q&A after with him and he was very succinct in his answers, but there's a scene where he's acting with Joseph Quinn's character, one of the emperors, Emperor Geta, and he goes, oh, it was just another day at the office. So it was funny to see how nonchalant he answered some of these questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all this just makes me so excited to see him on Broadway in Othello opposite Jake Gyllenhaal. That will be the place to be. But thinking of those emperors, too, and then I think we can wrap up our review segment talking about Paul and his performance. But what did you think of these two twin emperors? I liked that they were a play on Romulus and Remus. one of the classic tales around twins and around Rome's history. I also love their makeup, which we'll probably end up talking about through the season a little bit. What did you think about the twin emperors?
I just thought it was so over the top. Like, they were so childish in their evil that it was so simple and expected in a way. I think they do a great job. You know, they're good actors, but the makeup just heightened all of that for me. It's like we're in the 1800s. We have like heavily powdered faces and they're the comic relief of the story. So when they do have their big moment, I wasn't necessarily drawn in, I will say. But what did you like about them?
Well, I thought that the historical detail around like rich people staying inside and being out of the sun, so they're very pale, was a good detail. And I don't know, I thought they were just so creepy. And yes, maybe that's a little bit superficial or stereotypical, but I don't know. I thought it was also kind of scary just thinking about the time that we're living in and the types of people who make decisions for others. There's a scene with a monkey, Dondas, that I could see leaders here in the U.S. doing, actually. So I wouldn't be that surprised. You know, you, I think, expect people or hope people in positions of power will make good decisions, but that's not the reality, even in a democracy. So, yeah, they're very much like cartoon villains in the story. But I don't know. I thought the performances from both of them were good, even if they were a bit over the top. But I think that's what the roles called for, too.
The campy element was the monkey to me. And Fred talked about that and working with it for most of his time. But, you know, they're mirroring Commodus, Joaquin, again. And I just didn't see enough added to it, but I get the parallel and the historical context. I also just didn't believe any of the historical context of it or the facts, I guess, relating to that. And some of the reviews have been fact-checking Ridley Scott. I'm not going to go into that, but I did find one supporting performance that I had mentioned a long time ago being in the movie and not knowing what it was. Matt Lucas. As this announcer or conductor, and just every time he came on screen, I was laughing in the theater.
Well, on the historical facts, Ridley Scott famously does not care about historical accuracy. So any reviewers talking about it, just take those criticisms
doesn't
away
matter.
Because he doesn't care. Yeah, he does not care. I think that his craftspeople care and try their best to bring some of that in, but he doesn't care. I mean, he has those crazy CGI baboons in the Colosseum.
You mean they didn't have ships in water in the Colosseum?
Well, they did fill the Colosseum with water. That did happen. I wish we could actually, we could have seen the process for filling it. I think that would have been interesting. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't care as much about the historical accuracy around it either. I just think like certain details that craftspeople choose to incorporate are interesting when you can clock them. But yeah, I think Joaquin Phoenix's character, Commodus, that to me, I think I did miss that. I feel like he gives such a good performance in that film, and I really like that character. And I think that character is just much more well-written than our emperors here and feels like a scarier interrogation of power and how people take power than what we get here. I think that the exploration of power in Acacius, Macrinus, and Hanno / Lucius is way more interesting than the emperors, which in the first movie, the Joaquin Phoenix character was kind of the core of that, I think.
They just seemed distracted, and so I was distracted from that, I think. They felt like secondary characters and not like Joaquin.
Yeah. Did you like how I just completely glossed over your mention of Matt Lucas?
I love that. Yeah, I thought you were going to talk about his importance and what he, his character was doing.
You know, I'm going to quote a critic I overheard last night at my screening of Nosferatu, which is, you had Matt Lucas as Master of Ceremonies. Last time you had David Hemmings And now you have Matt Lucas. That's exactly what I feel. I thought he was, every time he was on screen, I wanted him to be gone.
It's just a weird inclusion, just like how I feel bringing Derek Jacobi back was, mm-hmm. because he really doesn't have much to do either. But I think we should wrap up with Paul. Mm-hmm. He has to hold this movie together, and I think he does it fairly well. It's interesting mm-hmm. thinking of this as people's introduction to him, because it's going to be as this gladiator who gets bloody and fights and is half naked all the time and is really buff. And that's very much enjoyable through this movie. His arms, his thighs, his chest. He captures the character and those battle sequences really well. I think he does a tremendous job. I think I liked him the most. So we can have that duel between Macronus and Lucius between us two.
Team Macronus all the way.
Well, you have him for the fantasy draft, right?
I sure do.
So you have both.
I'm so happy. Yeah, I think, you know, when I brought this up at the beginning of the episode, when I first watched it, I watched Gladiator the night before and was just so impressed by Russell Crowe in that. I kind of forgot that he really owned that time period quite a bit. He was a huge star, and I think that performance is pretty great. So I think when I first watched it, I thought, you know, I don't know if Paul Mescal is exactly living up to that, but I think he does a great job, actually. I thought that he, because at the core, this is a Paul Mescal role, right? He is reading poetry. He's so sad all the time. He's grieving.
Yeah.
And finding love and losing it. Like, that is classic Paul Mescal. So, you know, on the surface, yes, this is a very challenging, different role for him. But I do think we get to see a lot of those key qualities that make Paul Mescal the actor that many of us really love. And he is excellent in the fight scenes. He's really believable there. And I loved watching him, like, in the ring, chewing on the baboon, slamming that man through a table when he's fighting him in front of the emperors and at that party. I really, really liked him in this. My only note, I think the skirt could have been a little bit shorter. It was a little long.
He's brains and brawn and
beauty.
He's everything. And that's what we needed. And that's definitely a highlight from the movie. I would agree.
So let's get into some Oscar potential. We, at the end of last week's episode, talked about just initial thoughts around Wicked and reactions to it. These movies come out at the same time, so I think it's just natural to kind of view them as a pair, even though they are very, very different. But what do you think about Gladiator 2's Oscar potential?
I think it has great prospects in so many categories. Looking at how the original did, it had $465 million at the box office. It had 12 nominations. I mean, that is huge. And I don't think this will do either of those numbers. Looking at Wicked and Gladiator 2, I now think because of the rollout of them, Wicked is going to do much better. I think Gladiator 2 will still do fairly well worldwide. It's not going to have an issue. But I almost think the reverse of their Oscar potentials. I think Gladiator 2 could show up in plenty of categories, from Best Picture. I think we need to be talking about Paul Mescal and Best Actor, because we don't have a solid five yet. I don't think we're looking at, you know, him winning like Russell Crowe did for the original, which I never remember. I guess I just think that he would win for a movie like A Beautiful Mind that came the next year that he was nominated for.
Oh, thank God he didn't.
Right? But it's kind of coincidental and funny that that was the year that Denzel won for Training Day. So it's like, mm-hmm. we kind of have that connection happening this year. If Denzel is also nominated, which I absolutely think he will be and should be. So that's supporting actor. And then we go down and we just go from sound to the sound and editing pairing. I mean, you can't really rule that out. I don't know so much about score, and I don't even know if it can be eligible. We kind of had that issue with Dune Part 2 and needing so much of that to be original. We do have a new composer here. Rewatching Gladiator, I was just like, oh, I like how Hans Zimmer is reusing his pirate score through many of the sequences. He's like, I'm bored, we're reusing this. But then down through the text, from costume design to hair and makeup even, I mean, if you're talking about the Emperors, there's just no stopping a movie like this that excels in multiple aspects and is as epic as it looks and I think it expected to be.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I feel like I think Gladiator 2 has great Oscar potential and box office potential because I think, one, it's tracking really well right now, so is Wicked. But I feel like if we look at what happened with Napoleon last year, Napoleon was like dead on arrival, except for you. You always thought Napoleon could do it.
Oh, no.
You were the one. But a lot of us took Napoleon out of predictions because critics didn't like it. No one was watching it. It was an Apple TV Plus release. Mm-hmm. But it got 3 Oscar nominations. We saw it show up on the shortlist, and then it came through. Costume design, production design, visual effects. So if a movie like Napoleon can get in there, a movie like Gladiator 2, which is being received fairly well by critics, I think audiences will like it. I think it's going to do much better. So if that's kind of the low end, right? That's the floor, mm-hmm. let's say, is 3. Then we're talking about all of those additional nominations that you mentioned. I agree. I think Paul Mescal has a shot in getting into Best Actor because right now it's so open. This is one of the weakest years for Best Actor that I can remember, just of who will get into the 5, because I think everyone's pretty certain that we'll have Adrian Brody for The Brutalist, Coleman Domingo for Sing Sing, Ralph Fiennes for Conclave, and Timothée Chalamet for A Complete Unknown. And then the 5th spot, it's like, will the industry like Queer and go with Daniel Craig? I don't know. Will they like Glenn Powell in Hitman after he wins a Golden Globe? Probably. That would be cool. Paul Mescal is a previous nominee. Remember, we thought, oh, Hugh Jackman might get in for The Son? Please no. And yikes. Then Paul Mescal saved The Morning. So he could do that again here. I think he could get into that 5th spot for sure.
I think my other one below the line that I didn't mention, but I think was kind of assumed, was visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
That was up for the original as well. And one, which is, I think, surprising looking back at that, but it has even more here. I actually really like the baboons. That was my
I do too.
Favorite scene. Okay. I mean, maybe not favorite scene for you, but I just really love that battle sequence. And they were scary. Like, those things, you do not want to mess with them. I don't know where they're from or where they were in 280, but they could fight. And seeing Paul just ravage them was incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked them too. I know there was a weird quality. Like, they didn't look like real baboons, but they reminded me of how I felt about the flying monkeys that we just talked about in The Wizard of Oz. They had a human-like, a man-like quality to them that disturbed me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think sometimes, too, with CGI, it can be more is more. And that works with the Academy. Like, they filled the Coliseum with water. We have sharks. We have a huge rhinoceros going through the Coliseum in another battle sequence. And I can just picture now, I think, how they'll talk about, you know, the production design being all practical for the most part. And mm-hmm. then having that in conversation with the visual effects, I think that makes a lot of sense. What do you think about Denzel? Because right now he is my front runner to win.
He's definitely getting nominated. If we're looking at the lineup so far, I think my favorite performance from this year, at least so far, is Guy Pearce in The Brutalist. And maybe it's too similar to RDJ from last year, but I also don't know how people are going to take that movie. I know Denzel is super beloved. Is this a case for his 3rd Oscar? I don't know. I just don't, I guess, see it happening for Gladiator 2, this sequel, but I'm not saying that it's like not deserving. It's just like one of those cases of, oh, it's not a movie that is super everlasting, but mm-hmm. it's still a good performance. I think that's where I'm stuck. There is so much conversation happening around Kieran Culkin for Real Pain. I still don't think that win is going to happen, but I definitely think Denzel could be like a top two contender.
Yeah, I think the reason why I have him at number one right now is because to me, this does feel like a classic late career multi-Oscar win. Because it is this, it's in supporting, which I think tends to happen sometimes for our aging stars. It's a fun, exciting role that I can see the actors branch going for. And I also feel like it's something where even if people don't like the movie, they will like his performance or will think it's fun. Like they'll kind of fixate on that. So we're also manifesting Denzel's first ever BAFTA nomination because the Brits won't nominate him. So they wouldn't even nominate him for doing Shakespeare. So maybe they will nominate him for a Ridley Scott movie. But yeah, Kieran Culkin, I'm not going to say anything about that performance just yet and how I feel about it because I'm on the outside, but that's okay. Guy Pearce is fantastic. I would vote for him, probably. Like, I love that performance so much, but I just don't know because that's a really mean performance in a different way. And sometimes, you know, people are more receptive to those when men are in those roles. For sure, with the Oscars, we've had plenty of villains win in supporting actor, especially. But yeah, it's just they're completely different movies. Both are epics. Both talk about politics, or with three S's or however Denzel says it. But I think they're just two very different types of performances. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting seeing that Denzel won his first Oscar in supporting. My problem, I guess, is with Gladiator 2. It is a Paul Mescal vehicle, and it's not a Denzel-centered movie. So when people think of Gladiator, they'll be thinking of Paul, or at least in how they're getting this movie out there. And it's hard to make it into a Paul versus Denzel movie because of what the movie does.
See, I disagree because for me, this is entirely a Denzel movie, so much so that he, like, not that Paul doesn't exist. Paul Mescal obviously exists and he's great in the movie. But Denzel, through his performance, I think eclipses everybody else. You just are kind of reminded of what a movie star he is. I just changed my Letterboxd poster for this movie to just Denzel's face. Because to me, like, he is the movie. The movie is a Denzel Washington film, not a Paul Mescal one. I don't think he has the star power just yet. And I don't think the performance is the type of performance like Denzel's that audiences will be talking about. And the thing is, he's also the box office draw here, right? Like, he's the reason why people are going to see this. I mean, there are many reasons people will go or not go, but he's a big reason why people get in the theater to see it.
I don't think it was the reason that I wanted to see this. And again, it's not that I don't like Denzel. I think it's just optics of how they're portraying this movie. And I think the big reason to go is if you liked Gladiator or you want something similar to it. I just don't. I mean, I'm not a big trailer person anyway, but I don't remember seeing Denzel for a lot of it. I guess that's my worry. It's not like that he's not good or he's not in it. It also just feels weird, like, giving Denzel a supporting actor because he just always feels like a leading actor to me. So it's like, make him Gladiator. Maybe he's the lead in Gladiator 3.
Yeah, I mean, he is, like, I don't find him to be category fraud so much, but he is my lead, for sure. Like, when I think of this movie, he's the character I care about. And again, it's just like we talked about last week with Wizard of Oz. Like, I love those characters that are just a little bit too much. They have a little villainous streak. I think that's what I like. So it took me back to some of my favorite movies from growing up, too, just through his character. I don't think Ridley Scott's getting into director, though. That's one I think we can. I don't think this is happening in screenplay either.
those are the big ones that I don't see either. But I think with screenplay, because it's such a big movie and depending on how it does, I could see it just showing up there because, and we've seen that happen in the past, but I wouldn't put this in my predictions. I don't think I have it in there right now.
Well, those are our predictions and what we think of Oscar potential. If you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be? CGI, VFX for the baboons?
I think we're going with our teams here. I'm going with Paul Mescal, poor actor. I loved seeing him in something so different than what we've seen him in before. He's usually soft and reserved and still calculated, and he is some of those things here in moments, but he's also big and entertaining and just captures your attention so well. And he has to do that from start to finish. So I think for a movie where he's stepping into Russell Crowe's shoes, an Oscar winner for this role, is really scary. I would be intimidated, but he does that with such ease. So my Oscar is for him. Who is your Oscar for? Or what? But I think it's a
I think everybody knows my answer. I'm giving Best Supporting Actor to Denzel Washington. I like your answer too. I do think Paul is great. But there's just something about seeing a movie star in a fun role like this, making me think of, if you can remind me of some of my favorite Shakespearean characters with a David Scarpa script, you're doing something right. And that's what he did. He also just reminded me of like the old Swords and Sandals epics, like The Robe and those silly out there performances that we had.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's such a fun performance to watch, again, from everything from twirling his rings and how he plays with his robes to, I just think he makes every line in the script better. And I think he's so much fun.
Well, that was our review of Gladiator 2. It's in theaters now, so definitely go and see it. Let us know what you think. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we hinted at Glicked, which Wicked is also coming out today. We'll be talking about Wicked with two of our best friends who have the drama podcast, Connor and Dylan McDowell. This is a Drama Wilde reunion once again this year, and we'll be breaking down the musical, the movie adaptation, everything about Wicked. I cannot wait for this.
I'm so excited. This is my most anticipated episode of the year, really. I've been looking forward to this for so long. Our Drama Wilde episode each year, really, it's an annual staple, and we've done so many different topics, usually movie musical adjacent, and it's fun when we get to discuss a new one. So I'm excited to hear what they think. I'm sure it will be a very funny, ridiculous time, which is always good. And thank you all so much for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. For bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/OscarWilde, and you can also check out our updated nomination predictions at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.